Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Yucca.
And I'm Mark.
And today, we have a very special guest with us.
Hi, I'm Robin.
So we're going to be talking books and reading with a librarian. So welcome, Robin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So we thought that in our experience, non-theist pagan folks are, they're a little geeky in that they're into education, they're into ideas, they're into exploration of imagination, all those kinds of things. And when you think about those things, you immediately come back to books. All of us have been inspired by books since we were kids. And the new ideas that eventually find their ways into television and movies and all those kinds of things tend to spring out of books in the first place. So we're excited to have you here, Robin, and really look forward to hearing about some cool books and what you think about reading for adults.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you, Arwin, and Mark would mind sharing, why do you like to read? What brings you to reading? What makes you pick up a book?
Wow.
That's
a big question.
So much. I mean, on the one hand, I like reading Jim Thompson noir novels that are these sort of extremely gritty kind of 1930s noir sorts of novels. And to me, that's about submerging into an experience, which is what The Lord of the Rings is, or, you know, those sorts of things where you enter a world and the world is amazing. But mostly now what I read for is ideas. And when I find ideas that are exciting, I mean, I literally want to skip around the house. I'm like, wow, I never thought of that. That's so cool. And that keeps me interested in the printed word.
Well, for me, it's all of it. I love reading. I've always loved reading. I started reading when I was 3. I actually started reading before I spoke. And since then, I read everything. I grew up in a house that loved reading. We would read as a family every single night together and take turns reading and read aloud. And so the story part, the immersion in that, the poetry, all of that has always just been really important. But a little bit like you were saying, Mark, now the reading is usually about ideas for me, and just taking in as much as I can. And a lot of my reading these days is not me sitting with a book, but is audio. I listen to a lot, and I really appreciate that I can change the speed on that, because I can read faster on paper than people speak. And so it's nice to be able to speed that up, unless it's poetry or something like that. But if it's ideas, I think it's great to be able to consume that in different ways. So
yeah, audiobooks are fantastic. And just the way that they've made stories more accessible to people, like, and it's not just, I mean, we talk about audiobooks a lot as like, oh, it's accessible to people who are blind or can't see well, but it's also accessible to people who, you know, they just have trouble reading or they don't have time to read. And the only time they have to like really get into a story is maybe during their commute. And so audiobooks are just revolutionary.
Yeah, that's how it was for me. I used to commute for 2 hours every day and I loved it. I got to consume so much. And now I have little people in my life who cannot stand for me to be sitting. And if I have a book in my hand, they want to take the book, they want to sit on my lap, but I can be around the house, I can be cleaning, I can be doing things with my hands, I can be building things. and still reading.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool.
What about you, Robin?
Yeah. So I, like you, for a lot of my life, I think, you know, reading was just like this escape. And we talk a lot in the library world how books can be, they're doors, like you can escape to another world, but they can also be mirrors and places where you kind of see yourself reflected and have a moment to like just see yourself in somebody else or get an idea of what their experience is. And that is just so powerful. Yeah, that's one of the things that made me say like, yeah, I want to work with books and work in a library,
mm-hmm.
and get those out there. So
mm-hmm.
it's awesome.
Well, I have to say that when I was growing up, librarians were some of my best friends. I spent much of my childhood kind of sequestered in my room reading books. And it was about escape. It was about, this is a miserable situation, but I can go into this Hardy Boys world, or I can go into this Sherlock Holmes world, or I can go into this Tolkien world. Or I can explore the universe through this incredible, cool book about physics or whatever it is. And so, honestly, I don't know entirely. That's so ingrained in me that I have a kind of religiosity about books and about libraries. You go into a library and there's that smell. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Smell is just one of the most beautiful things in the world.
Yeah. So the smell of books is actually from, because we make a lot of our books from, we're making them from paper, and that's coming from wood. What you're smelling is sort of like the aged compounds in that wood.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat similar, if you have ever seen, I know, ponderosa pines, if you get really close to them and smell the bark, you can smell that like vanilla smell. They kind of smell like books or vanilla soap.
Yeah, jasper yeah. pines are also, they've got that same vanilla butterscotch sort of smell. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and that's what you're smelling when you smell a book, is those compounds. So.
Well, and the microbes that are steadily eating them. Because as soon as they turn into paper, there are microorganisms that are chewing away on them. And honestly, old books smell better than new books. They do. There's just something about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things that I have realized working in a library is that like reading and literacy is really, it is a lifetime endeavor. Because I mostly work with children, and so we're really big on like, all right, let's get these kids forming the habits even before they're, you know, they're not, they can't read yet, but we're still starting to teach them like, okay, like let's recognize letters, let's recognize sounds, and that's going to help you read. But really, literacy is a habit that can be carried forward into your life for your entire life, and has some really great values and benefits to you. In expanding your world, in helping with sort of that elasticity of your brain and memory. And there's a lot of great things that can come from reading throughout your whole life, not just when you're a child. So, and it's, I feel like the bonds we form with reading as a kid really are a huge determiner for whether or not we become readers as adults too. So
yes.
That is my plug for child literacy.
There's an attention span thing that people who are raised in the modern era with the screens that constantly click, 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 click. There's a capacity for focus that reading provides because it's a linear process. You go line by line and you read that I think we're in danger of losing because of how people are consuming their information now. And honestly, I think that really is a loss, because the world that you explore through reading is so much richer and more imaginative than anything that can ever be put on a screen.
Yeah. Awesome.
So that actually brings up a question for me. I know this wasn't one of the things we discussed talking about, but being a librarian today, especially, well, in the 21st century, but especially during the time of COVID, with all of the online and virtual components, what is the role of a librarian today in your idea?
So it's going to vary a little bit because I work in a public library. So the role of a librarian in, say, an academic library is going to be a little bit different. But, you know, mainly we see ourselves as we are connecting you to the information that you want. And in a public library, a lot of the information that people want is our most popular items are just popular fiction. Not a lot of people come to a public library to do really in-depth research. It's maybe a place where you start your research, but if you're doing something really heavily academic, you're going to go to an academic library. So really it's a lot of what we call reader's advisory, like figuring out what does this reader like to read and what can we recommend that's similar? And then look at like, okay, what formats do we have? That will suit their needs. You know, do they need to be taught how to use the Libby app so that they can read an ebook on their phone? Is a lot of what we do. We do a little bit with what we call reference, which is where somebody has a question and says, you know, hey, I need the phone number to the company that made this product 20 years ago. And then we say, okay, like, let me find out for you. Or, they're looking for health information. And I can say like, okay, I'm going to send you to this database that's going to give you more accurate and information than say like, what's the big website for like WebMD? It's like a better version and a more accurate version of WebMD. So we handle all sorts of crazy questions in reference. But a lot of what we do is just saying like, hey, like, let's figure out what it is you want and how to get you to it.
So you're connecting people with the information, essentially?
Absolutely.
In whatever format that is, although often that will be a book, but sometimes it's going to be using an app or
getting into a database. It's even things like we have things called Playaways, which is just a device that you can, so it has an audiobook on it, but it's really easy if you don't know how to work a smartphone or you don't have a CD player. Literally, you plug your headphones in and press play and it plays the book for you. So all sorts of different things.
The ethic that I'm hearing in that, though, is about public service and public accessibility.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that I've reflected on a lot about libraries, which I love so much, is that in the modern context, given how hostile so many people are towards any sort of public service, the idea of a library, which is like seeding every community in the country with a repository of information that gives out information for free, would be viewed as this like communistic takeover of the world.
Yeah. It is amazing that libraries exist in this country, and I'm so grateful for them.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
Another thing we talk about a lot in libraries is the issue of censorship, because sometimes people do not like the book that is on our shelves, and our kind of stance on it is, you know, like, we put out the books, we do our best to put out the books that are needed in our community. And so some of the most frequently challenged materials that we have are books that, or content that discusses LGBTQ, discussing those topics, like 8 of the 10 items on the most challenged books of 2019 were all challenged because they had some kind of LGBTQ+ content. And so we try to really be advocates for not removing those materials or making them accessible, because there are people within our community who really need those materials.
Sure.
It is also not uncommon for occult materials or pagan materials to get challenged.
Yeah.
So, you know, there, It's a great quote that every library should have somebody to should have content that would offend somebody. I'm butchering that quote, but yeah, so like the library I work in has books that I do not want to read that I think are kind of gross, but we still need to have those because there are people in my community that want to hear that perspective. So, yeah, we really are about fighting against censorship too.
Somehow it seems like there are never grassroots movements against Rush Limbaugh's books, but there are always grassroots movements against LGBTQ books, To Kill a Mockingbird, Huckleberry Finn, all those kinds of books.
Yeah, and Harry Potter is one that frequently sits on that list. Mostly for its like occult content, but there has been an interesting discussion about whether or not, like, what role
the author's opinions versus their artwork.
Exactly. Yeah. How do we balance that? And there's, I wouldn't say there's like always a clear cut answer, but we do our best to try and make sure that it's there for the people who want it. And we can find somebody's like, I don't want to, you know, I want fantasy, but I don't want to read J.K. Rowling. We can offer them other things. Let's check out Rick Riordan. So.
Yeah, that's a topic we could probably talk about for the rest of this session, is the whole question of the artist versus the artwork. And it's so easier to figure out once the artist is dead and no longer profit. It's easier to kind of parse out whether you can appreciate the artwork without supporting the artist.
There is one thing when it's in a library, and if you do consume it, you aren't paying.
Right.
So you may not, that might change somebody's feelings about then consuming the work, that they're not giving money to that person to continue whatever their platform is, that whether you agree or don't agree with that.
Yeah.
It's challenging too on that aspect, because like, even if you personally aren't paying, the library is paying with your tax dollars.
Yeah.
And library copies of books, like a library binding for a book, which a lot of libraries prefer to use because it's more robust, it'll hold up for longer. They also cost more. So it's good to have those options though. So
I'm glad that these are discussions that can be taking place, that this is a discussion we can be having about libraries. Like you were saying, that the fact that they exist is pretty, it's pretty miraculous in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It really is.
So
do you want to talk about some ways to find, or like some resources you can use to find books that might interest atheopagans?
Sure.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah.
Transfer or segue. Yeah. So I guess we should probably start with the Goodreads list.
Okay.
So if you're not familiar, Goodreads.com is a website that organizes books and lets you create personal list of books and a personal collection of books so that you can keep track of what you want to read next or help you find new books that you want to read. And so we have our own Atheopagan Goodreads list, and there's a lot of features of Goodreads that we don't use. Like I don't think we have any discussions on the Atheopagan Goodreads discussion board. But we have a list that anyone can add a book to. You just have to be a member of sign up for a Goodreads account.
Which is free?
Which is free, yep.
Okay.
And you can add books to that list if you found a book that you're like, yes, every Atheopagan should read this book. And you can also add, or you can also look for books in, you're say like, hey, I really like science. We have a list of books that have to do with science on that list. So you can use it to find new books and add books that you want other people to read. So it's a great resource.
That's great. I've been so impressed. A member of the Atheopagan Facebook group started the Goodreads shelf for Atheopagans. And it has blossomed into this gigantic list that ranges everywhere from books like Complexity by Mitchell Waldrop and Chaos by Jim Glick, and these sort of, you know, science for the layperson, but, you know, pretty technical kinds of books. And, you know, Breaking the Spell by Daniel Dennett, sort of classic atheist things, all the way over to, you know, the beautiful fantasy works of Terry Pratchett, and, you know, all of those which have that deep humanity to them and that recognize the importance of imagination. So it's definitely been a place where I have gone to look for new stuff to read.
Yeah. I have also been slowly adding children's books to it.
Yay.
Yeah, slowly, just because if you really let me go loose, almost the whole list would be children's books. That's really what I am interested in and what I do a lot. But yeah, there's so many possibilities there. So be sure to check it out. Yeah. There's also a great, so Goodreads is pretty good for discovering books that you want to read. But I wanted to mention another resource that is one of my favorite things. Unfortunately, it is not always easy to access. The easiest way or the most common way to find it is to go to your library, and they may have a subscription to it. But it's a website called Novelist. So like novel and list together.
Two L's or one L in that?
One L.
Okay.
And they have a service called Novelist Plus. And it's a database that lets you look up books that are similar, that have what they call read-alike. So if you're like, I really liked Sasha Sagan's For Small Creatures Such as We, I want to read more like this, you can go to the Novelist page for that book and it'll recommend read-alikes. It'll offer them based on the author. So like, here are authors similar to this author, and then it'll also do title read-alikes. So here are books that are similar to this book that you really liked. And I use it all the time, because people will ask me for book recommendations, and it's, you know, like, I have so many favorite books, I can't possibly choose, and what I choose might not be of any interest to you. So I usually like to say, like, hey, what's your favorite book? And then we'll look for something similar to that, using that. So it's an amazing service. I would check with your public library and see if they can help you get access to it, because it isn't free, but it's usually free through your library. So,
okay.
And is that fiction only, or is that also go into the realm of nonfiction? Or
it goes into nonfiction. So they have one service for children, and then they have Novelist Plus that has children and adults. And I mostly use Novelist Plus because it's just all in one happy place.
That's great.
Yeah. So we also have a book club for Atheopagans. Did we want to talk about that?
Yay! Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So we started a book club about a year ago, I think, that we had the first meeting. And then it really took off with the pandemic because people were at home with not as much to do. And they're like, hey, I'll read a book. So yeah, we've been picking, we usually meet about roughly every 5 to 6 weeks. So it gives us time to pick a book and then get the book and read the book. And we pick the book through a Facebook poll. I've created a specific Facebook group for the book club. And so we just do a Facebook poll and people can vote and people can add books that they think we would like to read. And then we'll have a discussion over Zoom about the book. And there's been some really great discussions. And we've also read some books that, like, I don't think I necessarily would have picked up, except they came up in the book club. So it was great to kind of get pushed out of my zone and like what I normally go to read. So like the first book we read, The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin, was amazing. And I don't think I would have just picked that up on my own. So
Oh. So you read the whole book and then get together as a group, and is there a led discussion? Is it sort of an organic discussion, or how's that work?
I try to make it as organic as possible. I do come with a list of questions or sort of just things that I thought, like, oh yeah, maybe we could discuss this, just to keep it flowing if it's not organic, but hopefully as organic as possible.
But it sounds like there is a facilitator.
Like, yeah, so I facilitate them. Yes.
Great. Great.
Wonderful. And can people access that without being on social media? Is there a way for them to get tied in?
Yes. So we're sharing the link through the Facebook group, obviously. I'm also trying to share that through the Discord channel that we have. And then there's a link to the Zoom meeting, because we're meeting through Zoom. There's a link to that Zoom meeting through the Atheopagan, is it the clerical newsletter?
Yeah, the Atheopagan Voice.
The voice, okay.
Who has self-ordained as an Atheopagan cleric through the Atheopagan Society website.
Okay. Yeah, so that is available through that as well. So, and you do not have to be a member of Facebook to join. It's just the most convenient platform for spreading that information. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could you give some examples of the books that have been discussed in the book club?
Yeah, so we read The Left Hand of Darkness. We read Sasha Sagan's For Small Creatures Such as We. And Sasha Sagan is Carl Sagan's daughter. And she talks, this book is, it's like the book that looked like it was written for Atheopagans, because it talks about ways to use ritual in your life. And she talks about like rites of passage and weddings and funerals and births. And so it was just remarkable. Like, I remember coming across that book because it had been turned into my library and I was like, oh, what is this? This is amazing. We also read How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. We read The Demon Haunted World by Carl Sagan. We read The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. And then this month's book pick, which we've picked it, there's still a bit of time if you'd like to participate, but it's called Bringing Race to the Table by Crystal Blanton. And it talks about racism in the pagan community, or race in the like, pagan community.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to dive into that one.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that discussion, actually. I'm going to be there. It's in my calendar. I'm going to be there.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, that's all really wonderful stuff. You've been modest about it, but we should say Robin created the Atheopagan Book Club. So this is something that wouldn't exist if not for her efforts and continuing work to poll people about what options they want to read and all that kind of stuff. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And it's definitely been a learning feel. It felt like there was a learning curve on my part, but it's, I'm open to it changing formats too. If people are like, hey, like I want to try, let's do this instead of just reading a book and talking about it. So I'm open to trying new things if you have any ideas.
Always a good stance.
Hmm.
Position to be in is a willingness to learn new things. So that's good. So now the question that has been burning in my mind. So what books do you recommend? I mean, do you have like a top five that you think Atheopagans and non-theist pagans would really enjoy, or?
Okay. So I would say if I had to pick one that I feel like is the closest alignment to the things we talk about in the group is Sasha Sagan's book For Small Creatures Such as We. It's amazing that it's like, oh, somebody else is going through these same thought processes as me. Like, how do I have a religious experience that isn't necessarily focused around like a belief in something other than science. So it was amazing to read that. I would also recommend, I really enjoy the writings of, I'm forgetting his name, sorry. The book is called A Short History of Everything.
Bill Bryson.
Thank you, Bill Bryson. Yeah, I really like, I love his nonfiction writing. And so, yeah, so that book is, it's just great because it's sort of a journey through science and not just like, here's what we, like, here's a bunch of science. It's more like, here's how we figured all of these things out. Here's how we figured out tectonic plate theory.
And the periodic table. And
yeah, it's like, it's a really easy, it's not a super heavy read, but it really does take you through kind of thinking about science and how we do science without being too overly technical. So I really love that book. I also really enjoyed The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. And it's, so this book is, it's kind of falls into science fiction or speculative fiction. It's written in the near future. And it was just a crazy time when we read it. It was right at the beginning of the pandemic, and kind of the world, or this world, is falling apart in the book. And it felt like it was paralleling so many things happening with the pandemic. But it also just has a really powerful message. And it's about this girl who's sort of looking at her faith, her Christian faith, and thinking like, how does this work with the real world? And she ends up creating her own religion, which she calls Earthseed. Even though she tends to use the language of Christianity, like she talks about God a lot, it's, you know, her message is like, God is change. And so it's very much starts to break away from Christian theology. And it's such a well-written book, and it's very intense, and it's an interesting read right now. Because it's set in the near future, which feels like now-ish. So. Mm-hmm. So that was another book I really enjoyed. Let me look at the Goodreads list and see, in our Goodreads shelf, and see if there's anything else that I also mostly on my own. I mostly read children's book and nonfiction, so those are going to be most of my recommendations.
Okay.
Do you have an age range in children that you kind of gravitate towards, or is it all children's?
So I worked with teens for a long time, and so I feel like teens are the group that I'm most like, I can hone in really easily on, and feel like I kind of understand what they're looking for. But it's also, working with children is so much fun too. So I say pretty much anything from birth to 18, which is a pretty wide range. But oh, of course, I didn't think of Terry Pratchett, but I would also recommend Terry Pratchett's work. I really, there's so much great Terry Pratchett, and there's, I feel like this community could fangirl over Terry Pratchett for a very long time.
Yes.
It's just so poignant in how he writes. So I really like, oh, go ahead.
So humane. I mean, yeah. At the same time that he's being very satirical, he's so human and he's so compassionate.
Yeah. I really love the Tiffany Aching series of Terry Pratchett, which starts with, I believe it starts with We Free Men.
Yeah.
And it talks a lot about
we didn't.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I was just going off like the wee free men. Nick King, Nick Queen, we didn't get fooled again.
Yeah. And that series just talks. It's amazing and it's hilarious, but it also talks about sort of like psychology. Like there's a character headology. Called Granny. Yeah, Granny Weatherwax talks about headology, and it's not actual magic. It's just like making you think magic works, and so it works.
Yep.
All of his witches stuff, I think folks who have been in the pagan community for a while might see some familiar characters in that.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. And I'm gonna put one children's book on the list, even though it's really hard to pick. There's so many great children's books. I really love the author, Oliver Jeffers. And he has a book called Here We Are, Notes for Living on Planet Earth. And he has just a great sense of humor. And Here We Are just goes to my heart. And it's just about like caring for the world and being a part of it. And I think it really speaks to that like human condition as a person on a giant planet. Yeah, so that's roughly my top five.
Nice.
At the moment. How about you? What are your favorite books?
Oh, you know, Complexity was one of those books that really made me prance around the room. It's a little dated now, but Complexity by Mitchell Waldrop. And it's about the creation of the Santa Fe Institute and the beginning of the study of complexity science and the implications of the nature of complexity mathematics, you know, the game of life and all those kinds of computer models and things. And it is such an extraordinarily macro view of the nature of emergent phenomenon and how that is the way the universe makes stuff that I would read a chapter and then I would literally skip around the house and, you know, get a bite to eat and that kind of stuff. And I'd be so excited. And then I'd go back and read another chapter. It was really cool. So I really recommend that book. And what goes with that is James Gleick's Chaos, which is just a great layperson's book for accessibility to the mathematics of chaos and all the implications that it has for, you know, why mountains look like mountains and why trees look like trees and all that kind of stuff. So that would be two of them. I have to say We Free Men would be up there too. I like We Free Men a lot, and I'm a big Terry Pratchett fan, so I'll give him some representation. Always Coming Home by Ursula Le Guin is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful vision of a future society that has returned to spirituality of the earth, even though it's a technological society. They have computers and things, but they have ritual observances around the course of the year. She refers to it as anthropology of the future. And it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous book. And it originally came out with a cassette tape of songs by the people of the culture that she's describing. You know, it's an ethnography, right? So there's recipes for stuff you cook and all these things. It's just wonderful. Just wonderful. And then I think I'd probably have to say Contact by Carl Sagan. Because it embraces both the gritty ugliness of human politics and the tremendous wonder of just really coming to grips with the universe. The last page of the book, not the movie. I love the movie, but it was different. The last page of the book of Contact will blow your mind. It's just overwhelming. So those are mine. How about you, Arwen?
That is really, really tough to answer. I've been thinking about it because I thought that this question might come up when we said we were going to talk books. I would think So probably no shock to anyone listening. The Lord of the Rings was incredibly important in my household. So I grew up around that mythology, but my sort of chosen book series that really, really spoke to me that I encountered as a late teens really changed my view of the world was actually The Mars Trilogy by Kim Stanley Robinson. And there's a lot of, some people love and some people hate that author because he makes Tolkien look like he goes at a quick clip. He spends pages describing the escarpments that the, you know, rovers are running over and all of that. But it's fantastic hard sci-fi for the real nerdy folks, but it's incredibly pagan as well. So if anyone who's read it, getting into Hiroko and her watching the, it's the story of the first 100 people to colonize Mars and the story of the terraforming of the planet and the back and forth between the different sides and beliefs about what people should be doing and how it's being done. But there's a group that really dives into the sacredness of life and nature and the Marsness and the earthness. And that's one of the ones that I'll come back and I'll re-listen to that once a year, maybe once every other year, because each book takes like 20 or 30 hours to listen to, and there's three of them. So that is hugely influential. And I definitely recommend it to folks, knowing that the writing style is one of those that, like, you know, it's like sauerkraut, you love it or you hate it. But other ones, interesting, I was thinking about ones that were also very influential that might be a little bit outdated now. Emergence, which is also connected with the Santa Fe Institute. And that was a Stephen Johnson talking about emergence and complexity and all of that. And I have a couple of other ones here. The Machinery of Life by David Goodsell is another one that it's mostly an illustrated book, but it shows the pieces of life. So it shows what does the ATP molecule look like? And it, you know, it's got a full picture out of like a euglena that with all of done with each and every molecule. So you see how things fit together. So those ones have been major perspective changers, view changers. And I think the other person that I would suggest, another author, would be Robert Hazen. And he's done some lectures. He's got a few things through The Great Courses. So if you listen to The Great Courses or The Great Courses Plus, which is you can watch it. But he's one of the fathers of geobiology, which is a new way of looking at Earth and looking at the coevolution between life and mineral.
Mm-hmm.
And all of his stuff has been just mind-blowing, looking at the connection between all of that. And he also recently has done a lot of work with carbon in terms of carbon as the life element. And I think that would be the other one. If someone was going to be looking up, I'd say his work is really incredible. But from there, I mean, it's so hard to choose. There's so many good things, right? I was looking at I listen to a lot of books. So my Audible library has 331 titles. So most of the things I listen to, but a few of those, like The Machinery of Life, you can't listen to that book, you have to look at that book. So
I personally surpassed the point where it's like the length it's going to take me to read my to be read pile is it exceeds my life expectancy at this point. So passed that a long time ago. So I definitely understand there's so much good stuff out there and so many different things to look at. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's actually, I want to throw in one more perspective changer, which is a field guide to bacteria.
Ooh.
I do not recall her name, the author, but it really gives a perspective change in terms of most ecology degrees, most of that stuff completely leaves out bacteria and archaea, and yet they are the foundation of all life, all ecosystems on Earth. Every single one, whether you go down to the hydrothermal vents, to Antarctica, to the ones we interact with. And so that's just a shift to a bacteria-centric view that that would actually be one that I think would be, if I had to make a mandatory book for anyone going into biology or ecology, would be that. Mm-hmm. And it's done in a way that you don't have to have a biology background to get. It's accessible to most folks. So, yeah. Cool.
So it looks like the author is Betsy Dexter Dyer. Does that sound right?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. And she's got a Modern Scholars course on that too, that people can listen to. So I think Modern Scholar is sort of the competitor of the great courses. They're kind of like that same, yeah, but that's yeah.
Same kind
so, of that same kind of idea. So anyways.
I have a, since, well, I want to put in one more plug too. I can't believe I didn't mention Caitlin Doughty, who writes. So she's a mortician, and she runs a YouTube channel called Ask a Mortician, where she talks about death and how we interact with death and how it fits in our culture. But she's also written 3 books. They are all amazing. But the one I really just like could not put down, like lost sleep because I was like, I'm finishing this book tonight. It was so good. It's called Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, and it's lessons from the crematorium. And it talks about how she became a mortician and how she became so fascinated by death, and sort of lays out kind of what she wants to do to change how we interact with death in our culture. So it's such a good book. So
I have the sense that we could talk for the next hour just about, oh yes, and this one and this one.
Exactly. I could talk for like 2 hours just about children's books, so yeah, could go on a long time.
Yeah, actually, that's you're talking about your audiobook list, Yucca, and that's one thing that I feel really remiss about, is that I have not recorded my book for audiobook. But I understand now why audiobooks are so expensive, because it is a tremendous undertaking to try to record your book as an audiobook. It's really a job. I don't know when I'll ever have a chance to do it.
Yeah, it's big.
Well, Robin, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Really enjoyed your perspective and your ideas. And I'm sure that there are lots of people out there listening, scribbling down titles madly.
Yeah, happy reading.
Yeah, whether that's with the written book, with pages, or listening, or on your phone, or whatever.
My philosophy is read however you can. If it's reading is an audiobook to you, great. If reading to you is a graphic novel, awesome. I'm not here to judge you on what you read or how you read, but it's important, I think, that we read and that we get those perspectives that are really important.
Absolutely.